on the air. 3,300 women from 58 unions met during the weekend of March 22nd to formally organize the first multi-union women's coalition, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, known as CLU. Today we have two women, Pat Strand and Linda Osborne, who attended the CLU conference and who will give us some of the highlights of what happened at the conference and also tell us what is happening locally with some of the women's unions here. I think first we'd like to start out by finding out exactly why CLU was formed.
Well, I think women in unions have a lot of grievances. The women at the conference had a lot of pent-up anger that they could hardly control. They were there as union women, and they believed, I believe all of them, that within unions, women can get justice on the job and can advance. But over the years, just as in any other institution, unions have tended to keep women down and ignore some of their needs, ignore their interests. And the women there were getting together to see what they could do as a mass about these problems.
Yeah, I think another whole purpose of CLU was the women in unions realized that they were getting better benefits, better pay scales than women not in unions. And like CLU put together statistics that out of the 34 million women in the workforce, only 4 million are organized. So a whole big thrust of CLU also will be to organize the unorganized women workers. And it's not at this point very clear how it's going to work into the structure or, you know, in real action programs. But I think that was like a real concern of a lot of the women there.
How is the conference itself, how is it put together? I mean, who started the conference? How long have women that you know have been even thinking about, you know, getting other women in unions together? I mean, it seems like a pretty overwhelming job, you know.
I think one of the, in giving credit where credit is due, to the women's, the Labor Department, which around about the time of its 50th anniversary, 7 years ago, it started trying to get women in various cities together as trade unionists to work in community affairs and to think and work together as women trade unionists. A broad scope of interest. And I think that was part of the emphasis. Of course, a lot of this goes way, way back. There have been organizations over the years, such as the Women's Trade Union League and many others that were concerned with women in the union. Women's Trade Union League they started in 1903 or something like that and died in 1950. And there have been other groups but working sort of on the periphery of the labor movement, sometimes with cooperation from students and sometimes not. But anyhow, that was one of the ways that I think it started. Of course, it's been a women's Linda and I were there, but about a year ago, in June, I think it was 72 there, or before that, I guess, in the spring, there was what's called the airport meeting. Some of the women staffers primarily who knew each other and had known each other over the years and met at Chicago O'Hare Airport in New Jersey. Anyhow, they started to talk about getting women together, and that was where it started just a little over a year ago.
What were some of the things that happened at the conference as far as what women could do, you know, when they got back to their hometown, to their own local union, were they able to come out with anything besides, you know, things that they can start doing when they get back to their own
union?
I don't know if there's anything that, I mean, I didn't come away feeling there's anything that, you know, I personally could do, but there was, like, one of the big issues at the conference was coming out in support of the lawnmowers, which is a fund, with some, I don't know how to say it, but the Teamster women came out in support of the farm worker women at the conference. This is like a really big thing because Teamsters have been working to undermine farm workers as a, you know, as an international union themselves, but the women within those two unions said that they do support each other. And like as far as, and that means when you come home that you would make the women that probably find out if they're great for a while and, you know, support the boycott. And there's also a boycott that comfort brothers and it was
what were some of the main issues that were discussed at the conference? I know that it was, first of all, that there was 3,300 women there, and I can imagine that organization would be very difficult. What I'm sure that not that many women were expected to begin with, isn't that right? That 3,300 women was really a surprise to everyone there. And I understand that, first of all, you were run by Robert's Rules of Order. And I wonder if that in itself posed a problem in not getting a lot of issues discussed that could have been, you know, what kind of things did you discuss while you were there?
Well, mostly we were in meeting caucuses. So I was in the newspaper during caucus because I'm a member of the Washington Baltimore newspaper that was really fast. And we were also in area caucuses, so we discussed what we would do when we got back to Washington. Washington women had left the peace conference meeting. Planning for it, getting busy, you know. And there had been planning meetings,
every kind of union that a woman belongs to at this point, or is it exclusive to only certain unions?
It's all unions, as it stands right now, except the way that the qualifications for membership are associated with the women belonging to bona fide owners, the bargaining organization, and in some states that is prohibited by law. They belong to a certain unit, but they don't have the collective bargaining rights. But there was an amendment right before the body to change that so that, you know, women could participate. That was prohibited by law, given collective bargaining rights. But it would, and that amendment most probably would be approved by the National Coordinating Committee. It wasn't voted on at the Congress. So, in effect, all women in any union, you know, can belong to the union. It's not like just a certain school or a certain trade. It's all unions.
And so there were a lot of representative unions there then.
I think the conference was historic because of the fact that the people there from every union. And there were also people from the government, there was a huge contingent from the United Auto Workers, which is not AFL-CIO, and also from the industry, and from the United Electrical Workers. These are the non-AFL-CIO unions you can think of, but also groups like the National Education Association and necessary, it's not necessary.
That Clue is going in now. I mean, this was your first conference. I'm assuming that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And was there a structure set up? I mean, you mentioned a national coordinating committee. Could you explain what that is? And
that is just a body of representatives. It's for a maximum of 4 representatives from every union that was there. It's just a smaller group to handle some of the business too between conferences. I think the most important part of the structure at this point, and the thing that will make all the words that sound really nice on paper come true, is the local chapters. That's how they like organize and form their issues and all that really depends on the women in each area.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back and decide that what it really meant was that they themselves, you know, have to start taking more action and finding ways to, you know, to get support for what they want. I think everyone probably came back with a different idea of what they really would like Clue to be, because it's still like this new thing. You know, and it really does depend on this local action, I think, to be anything more than just a nice middle or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, with good tests or whatever. But if they really did have strong grassroots organizations of groups that included both women trying to organize unorganized women, which is really a very difficult task, and the women doing that will need all the support they can get. But women involved in these really local struggles will be able to get the kind of support they need, whether it's maybe some kind of money, maybe just to serve a boycott, or, you know, anything like that. Like, also unions do have a lot of power, and if it could mean some kind of political support in that way, you know, that's how I should be more really effective.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what kind of actions can women take within their local unions?
Well, I think Clue's statement of purpose outlines this very well. First, it's to get organized. The more women we have in unions, to get women are protected and jobs because they have unions. And then they become a group of unions, a voice. If you have 15 women, and they feel that they want to try to get maternity leave for certain kinds of contracts, they're not going to be listened to. It's not as much as if they're a whole group of women. And I think so you want to get women organized into unions, and then also to wanted to work on women's issues with unions, so it's a good thing. Women everywhere feel the need of childcare services. And it's not only women, it's also men too. And not only trying to get some sort of federal legislation for childcare, it's to negotiate it with the workplace, so negotiate, if not at the workplace, negotiate some sort of childcare program that would take into account that children are as important as the automobile. You negotiate parking or transportation for many unions, and then the children are left to fend for themselves while the cars are there.
I would like to interrupt at this point. When you were speaking about child care, well, I just read in one of the local feminist newspapers that an amendment for child care on the job site was voted down. Would you explain that?
Well, on the job site, a lot of women said the last thing we want is to have our children come and work in the factory, or come around the factory for a living. Or if we are cleaning women, and there are a lot of solutions for us at this conference, and these people, many of them, work with cleaning women in office buildings or in hospitals, and they said, we don't want our children there. It's not a very healthy place to put them. So, that's why that particular reading was voted down. As they did that, that was not a repudiation of childcare. For example, as I said, I belong to a newspaper guild, and the newspaper guild unit at the Washington Post several years ago in its contract negotiated a childcare study. They were successful in getting the case management to give them $10,000 to finance a study of childcare. And the study, which has never been released by the Post, for obvious reasons, was just great. It was a way to have childcare services. Homemakers, community childcare, babysitting fees, including possibly a childcare facility at the workplace, but it encompassed a whole range of possibilities that they thought the Post should consider. And just as an aside, when they were doing a study of interest in the Post plant, they found that the printers, who are probably males down to the very last one, were extremely interested in childcare because they wanted their wives to go out to work. And they couldn't get their wives to go out to work if they had to go home with the kitties. And this is something that they found. But this shows that childcare really can be a very wide subject, not just the childcare facility at workplace.
Can non-union women belong to CLU?
Yeah, I think after the Chicago Conference, we adopted a statement of purpose, and that took a long time. And then when it got time to, the Chicago Conference was trying to do 2 weeks worth in about a day and a half. And it ran from 8 o'clock on Saturday and 9 o'clock on midnight that night. And we only took because the hotel said, you've got to get out. And we really did. Every meeting ended with people from the hotel coming around saying, this is it, no one else has to come in. And so what happened to the structure was that it was discussed in this class that there was no way, just no way, that that could be covered on the floor. So it was referred to either the children or the children's and they'll come up with something structure. But until they do that, obviously, there is no structure. So we're just operating on a lot of different bases at the moment. And so I think that many women are very interested in that.
How can women get in touch with you?
They can just meet us. There's the next meeting with May 9th, which is the Thursday.
How many women are involved in the DC chapter's crew? What were some of the reactions of the male union members to the women union members organizing? Are there any other things you'd like to talk about before we close the show?
Half staff members and half
I think the staff members also deserve representation to work hard in the union, but also to make sure that, you know, rank and file women are in there too. And I think that just sort of shows that the women there really are, you know, discussing something really basic enough that I hope anyway it won't become like a really bureaucratic type of thing. Like this, you know, so the women can go into it or have power in and make decisions about it.
Well, are there a lot of staff women within unions? I'm really surprised that there are any at all.
Not a lot, but like at the conference, there were a fair amount of staff in there. Yeah, but I think that one of the reasons is that there is staff women was because they had a chance to know each other over the years. And they have a little more freedom to travel and to get on the phone. And so it's sort of natural that they would be the ones to start doing something like this together. When you talk about women staff, I think that they think of Edith Van Hoff, as you know, a lot of it, which is in the plant for 17 years. All of the women from the United States of leadership, the staff leadership, they're hired with an out of plant. In World War II, this is when women got into the workforce and they got into the industry because before that they weren't hired and they had to wait till the men went away to work. And they did that and worked in the work. And they had a very clear memory of what it was to work in the camp and what it is to be a woman in the business. And I think that suspicion that motives their involvement in serious rather than intended. You did ask if you have my favorite statistic, I want to bring it up. I'm bringing it up no matter what. But although it got 50% of the women to the trade conference that they really paid, I think possibly that may be a harbinger of good things to come. But my statistic is about the women's representation at the Rio Bacalhau Convention last year. Rio Bacalhau was a biennial convention. And so Rio Bacalhau represents the largest body of organized workers in the country, 13.5 million. And they had 882 delegates, of whom 20 were women. They always say there isn't a woman on the FBI's executive council. Well, that's 1 out of 33. When you think of 20 out of nearly 1,000, you see that women and women are really the one with that.
Hopefully Clue will be a very key answer to this whole thing. Well, it looks like our time's up, and I'd like to thank Kat Strand and Linda Osborne and Radio Free Women's engineer Chris Murphy. This has been Radio Free Women. This show has been produced by Radio Free Women, Incorporated. This program, or portions thereof, may not be reproduced without the written permission of Radio Free Women, Incorporated, Washington, D.C. Preceding program was produced in the studios of WGTB-FM.